Morning Zoo, live from Capital Radio in London, here at 93.3 WMMR. Sneaking. He was just telling us a story about what it's like dealing with snow in this area.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, Rick.
Morning. It's cold, it's cold. I want to be in Philly where it's warm. Oh, yeah, well, London, you have to bear in mind, England, we have... Probably if we have another six snowflakes, we'll have a minister of snow. We actually do that. We had a minister of drought a couple of years ago when it didn't rain. Yeah, they made a minister of drought.
We called him Mario Cuomo or Governor Kane in our area.
No, we do, honestly. We had a minister of rain when we had too much rain. And if we have more than about another six flakes, we'll have a minister of snow. See, what happens is everybody panics because six snowflakes... And everything stops. The trains stop. The buses stop.
Kind of like SEPTA. It's about the same way in Philadelphia.
It's absolutely crazy. So what happens is, you know, everybody's going to jump in their car because everybody wants to get home. So it's crazy. You open your curtains in the morning, you know, and, well, first of all, you find out where you are when you open the curtains in the morning. Then you see the snow and you know that your day is ruined. You know, you can add an hour onto everything, that half your meetings are going to be, you know, blown out the window. And you just sit in traffic jams and there's people's cars steaming and people steaming, and it's bloody cold, I'll tell you.
It's funny, last night traveling around London, David, our limo driver, said to us, never snows here. Never snows. You never see a snowflake in London.
Where does he come from?
I have no idea. And we get up this morning, we walk outside, and I look up at the sky. I look at David, and I go, is this the snow that never happens? And he says, yep, I don't know where it came from.
David Cassidy, I mean... I mean, it's unbelievable. Yes, sir. It's going to be a very, very cold winter. I tell you what, at the end of the week, you're going to do well to get out.
you hit the streets early this morning, didn't you?
Yes, I did. You better believe it.
You went over to Big Ben or Parliament, that whole area?
Also Westminster right there, sure.
So, and what did you do there?
I just stood on the street corner and looked at people go by and spoke about Big Ben.
So, I mean, what you're basically telling me is you did this here at 93.3 WMMR. Before we go any further, we're on Independent TV right now.
Yes, we are.
Can we check on what's on Independent
TV? Hang on, I can't see anything there. Just a minute.
Well, if you can't see anything, how come we can see you?
Ouch! Oh, hang on, where am I?
Is this a soap opera?
No.
It's a program about books. They do it for kids in the morning. All the new books, children's books that come out. It's
you get up early and watch this?
I'm a television freak. I've eight tellies in my house.
Oh, my Lord.
Eight tellies.
Your licensing fees must be intense.
No, you only play for
one. Only pay once?
I only pay for one, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the telly goes on first thing in the morning for breakfast TV at 6 o'clock, and it goes off when the little dot goes.
What's your favorite American show?
My favorite American show? I have to say, a lot of people sort of knock American TV. I actually love American TV. I love the way that it's formatted, where you've got the same sort, so you know roughly every day, you know, what's happening. I love all the comedies. My wife's a great, you know, Dynasty and Dallas freak. I prefer the English soaps, but I love the American sitcoms. I think they're wonderful. And also, you still put together the best TV movies that there are. Great stuff.
Good answer.
Right. Do you have a dish?
Pass?
You pass. Do you have a dish? You have all these televisions.
Spill me food, otherwise.
I know what you mean.
No, what I do have, I have powerful areas. She cried. I have powerful aerials in my loft, my attic, with extra amplifiers, so I pick up a lot more of the stations around the country. I pick up about seven stations, which I know is not a lot for you, but you know, the average home in England only picks up three or four. It's very exciting.
It's the Morning Zoo here at 93.3 WMMR. Rick Wakeman is our guest, and there's a ton of things I want to talk to you about. One of them being, first of all, is there anybody that's going to be a guest on the show that is under 6'3"? So far, Denny Lane is going to be under 6'3".
Oh, Denny Lane's under 6 inches. Yeah, right, under 6'3". Look, I saw Denny the other day. He's getting small. Denny's actually shrinking.
Well, that's what happens as you get older. You realize that. He's going to be our guest later on this morning.
He wasn't looking where he was going. He bumped into me and I couldn't walk for a week.
But you sang a lot, huh?
Oh, cool. Say that again.
You started out in a way that a lot of English musicians have, with basically a classical background.
Yeah.
Is that common to English musicians, that they come through a conservatory sort of education into music?
Well, for the session musos, yeah. And I was basically a session muso in the first place. I was very lucky, actually. There was a huge gap between sort of classical, I hate using the sort of terms, mm-hmm. but between classical and pop, there was a huge gap. I mean, one didn't accept the other at all. And I was same as quite a few musicians who were brought up classically trained who liked pop music as well, but it was sort of, you didn't say that you liked classical, and classical musicians didn't say they liked pop.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a nice thing that happened at the beginning of the 70s, of which some, well, people like George Martin with the Beatles arrangements in the late 60s started to make it acceptable that instead of strings just going pretty little noises at the back of pop records, actually played something and got involved. And it became acceptable. And half the battle with music is it becoming acceptable. And so I class myself, and so do I think bands such as Yes and Genesis and, you know, other people like Steve Howe, we're all very happy that we were accepted at that time. I think if we'd tried to do it either 5 years before or 5 years later, mm-hmm. then none of the music would have happened.
Orchestral rock is something that is only really indigenous, shall we say, to England. There aren't any American or orchestral rock bands. It only came out of here.
Yeah. It was a minority thing. See, one of the things you've got to remember about England, even though we sell a lot of records, or Britain, I should say, it's a very small island, so... if something takes off for a little period of time, even if it's only for a few months, then the whole of Britain knows about it. Whereas, you have areas in America where something will just break in a certain part of the Midwest, and it'll sell as many records and be as huge there, in fact, maybe even bigger, than the whole of Great Britain in size. But because it's actually stuck in that one area, it never gets to be national, if you understand, if you understand what I mean. So I don't think it could have broken anywhere else. You know, I'll probably get shot for it, but I think the standard of musicianship in America is higher than it is here anyway.
Really?
Yeah, I think the general standard of musicianship is much higher.
But do you find that, like, American musicians grew up looking toward this side of the Atlantic? Now, yeah. Does the same thing go on here where everybody said, oh, gee, well, it's so much better in America?
No, I think there's a respect between good musicians and good bands that go on. There's the false respect, oh, I think he's great, and all that crap that goes on. I mean, there's a real mixture of things that go on. But it is, you go into the average bar or the average club in America, and you'll hear a much higher standard of band than you will do over here. I think that's because the competition is so much more. You've got millions more players than there are over here. But I think the other thing that doesn't help is because you've got so many more musicians, they tend to play what they know the record companies and people are going to go for, because the competition is so tight.
Now, what was it like for you the first time?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought we were just going to talk about music.
the first time that you were in the States, because you've been States a number of times. You did a solo tour, of course, and the work you did with Yes. But the first time that you went to America, because I remember when I was about, 19 years old, maybe 20, I was driving around Maine with a friend of mine, and two English blokes sitting on the side of the road and hitchhiking. They're holding out a Union Jack.
And you passed me, didn't you?
We picked them up, and we were coming through the white. You're going to take this down the toilet, Wakeman, I know it. We're coming through the White Mountains, and the two of us, being kids from New York City, had never seen anything like the White Mountains before. And we're like, oh my God, oh my God. And the guys turn to us and say, haven't you ever seen these mountains before? And I said, look, Bub, I've never seen mountains before, let alone these mountains.
Yeah.
And had this understanding that you could basically see the United States in about the time it would take you to see all of Great Britain. Mm. I mean, like, when you first got to the States, like, what sort of shock was it for you, as to its, like, size?
The first time I went there was in 1971, and I arrived in Los Angeles, and I was...
A weird place to start.
I'm a car freak, first of all, so I love American cars, so I did enjoy it. I had a strange thing, this is going to sound really daft, I was very self-conscious about my accent when I arrived there. And it's going to sound really stupid, but we stayed in the old Riot House, which was absolutely wonderful. I mean, I don't know why I bothered to book in the rooms. I mean, nobody ever went to bed. when I walked in there.
Yeah, for those of you who don't understand what the Riot House is, it's the Hyatt House on Sunset Boulevard.
Which is no longer there.
Right. You know? No, it is.
But it's not the Hyatt House anymore, is it?
No, it still is. It's still
a Hyatt House.
It was the 4th of July weekend when I was out there, except TVs don't come flying out of the windows anymore. Oh. It is.
Yeah, well, when I was there, TVs were coming out with people on the end of them. But I went in and I met sort of wonderful characters like Fee Waver and all that sort of crew, and I had a great time. But I was frightened to talk. You know, because I was very self-conscious about my accent.
That's
weird,
isn't it? No, that's strange because, like, Americans hear someone with an English accent and they just fall apart.
Yeah.
They'll talk to you for hours. Yeah. We're not impressed. We've been here for days.
Yeah. And then, I always remember, the wonderful differences in language as well. I mean, I really didn't have a clue. I mean, when somebody sort of said salad, Thousand Island dressing. And I thought, well, you know, throw coconuts at it. I had no idea what that. We didn't. Salads weren't part of a course of food in England. They're all that sort of like, you know, salads with all these stupid dressings and things.
Well, we never heard of nappies before.
Sorry,
nappies. Never heard of.
Oh, I'll show you one. Hold on a minute. Yeah, that's right. Well,
and Horlicks, we thought it was something you only got from prostitutes.
Yeah, that's right.
It's expensive, but it feels great. Those Horlicks.
Yeah. Actually, the amazing thing is the countries have actually become so much closer in the last 15 years because the languages have crossed over. We've got so many Americanisms now. There's like English, you know, the swear words was the classic ones, obviously we can't do on the air, but English swear words are just so totally different. And we also have a wonderful word which means drunk over here, which over in America means mad, you know.
Which word, man?
It means to go wee-wee.
Oh, you mean pissed?
That's the one.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So the first time somebody sort of, we were sort of like wandering around after having a few too many bevvies, and said, I'm really pissed this morning. And then the rental company would be really worried. So, well, look, is there anything we can do? No. And they got really worried about it.
You worked with Cat Stevens. Yeah. Morning is Broken, of course. Do you have any idea nowadays, because people call the station all the time and goes, where's Cat Stevens? And there was all these things about him becoming a monk and him selling off all his worldly possessions and all of this stuff.
Well, I don't know exactly what happened. I saw an interview with him a little while ago. He did. It's a very strange thing, because Steve was ill many years before I met him, and he had TB, in fact, and lost the lung. And I met him, was very good friends with him, and we did record him Morning is Broken and a few other things. Then he went on tour, and he did a few tours, and then he found this, I don't know, he's not a Buddhist, I don't know what he is, but he's changed his name, and he turned his home into sort of like a shrine or a temple, and he sits there, and he did an interview on television about a year ago, and he refused to be called Cat Stevens, he didn't want to talk about music or anything at all. I believe, I'm only talking here, so that the royalties and things from past records go to this religious group or whatever, and personal opinion, I mean, I'm not into those sort of religions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I believe in God, and I think that he's absolutely potty because he has a God-given talent and a very, 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 very good one. One of the things is, if you have a God-given talent, mixed metaphors intended, but for Christ's sake, you should use it.
Right.
And I think that there's something more than meets the eye as to what, you know, why he's doing that. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him, and nobody seems to be able to get to.
It's the Morning Zoo here at 93.3 WMMR. Rick Wakeman is our guest, and this is Cat. Morning Zoo here at 93.3 WMMR. I told you not to go for Mexican food last night. Rick Wakeman is our guest. 24 minutes past 7 in the morning, 59 degrees on Rittenhouse Square. Mixed sun and clouds today. A high temperature about 70 degrees. Clear tonight. The low around 53. Partly sunny tomorrow. A high of about 70. Presently 59 degrees on Rittenhouse Square. Jack Strapp is going to stop by. You want to give me one of these Polo candies? I'm trying to talk on the radio and it's impossible to do.
Oh, yes. They're good, aren't they, those Polo?
Oh, they're very good.
Yeah. The mint with the owl.
The mint with the owl.
Or a very, very expensive whore. I'm not quite right.
The Zoo here at 93.3 WMMR. Rick Wakeman is our guest, and we'll be right back with Rod Carson and Jack Strapp. All right, Rick Wakeman is our guest. Are you into other sports other than darts?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, are you into any other sports other than darts that we can talk about on the radio?
Oh, yeah, horizontal jogging.
Horizontal jogging, yeah.
And a few
That's
others.
Something like trembling.
I hold the world record, actually, at the moment for that. About 4.5 seconds. we're right at the end of the cricket season, as Jack said, just before he fell over. it's interesting about cricket because we've got snow outside and yet we're still playing cricket. Don't you find that amazing?
Well, it's only not the English much snow. It's not much snow. What about last year in the World Series when they were having the playoffs in Toronto and they had snow coming down something fierce? Speaking of American sports,
yes,
the Indoor Soccer League, I don't know how much it's still alive in the States because the Philadelphia Fury no longer play, but you were an investor in that team, weren't you?
Pull yourself together, man. Pull yourself together. Right. Yes, I was. Well, I felt very sorry for Philadelphia because they hadn't got a soccer team, so me and a few others, we bought them one. What a mistake.
Who else was in on the team?
Peter Frampton, Frank Marcelona, Elliot Hoffman. There was a few other sort of private investors that came in the rock and roll business. But it was a great shame. I mean, you know, we lacked a certain something called winning, and sort of we had lots of wonderful seats in the stadium.
Lots of wonderful, plenty of seats.
But not very many bums sitting on it.
No.
Actually, I went down for a lot of money, but I don't regret it. I think the thing that let it all down was, and I don't mind saying this on the air, in spite of the fact it'll probably get me into lots of trouble. It's not a rude word, by the way. One of the things that was privately agreed upon was that America, you know, because when, there's no doubt about it, that soccer, if it had been given the right chance in America, America would now be one of the leading forces in soccer in the world. It's a fact of life because you've got the population, you've got the people, you've got the colleges, and you've got the university and the know-how and the finances in order to do it. But one of the things that was desperately important was that to show its keenness and to make it the only real world sport that there is in existence, which it would have been, would be to be able to stage a World Cup. Which they are perfectly capable of because it's the only country in the world that's got all the stadiums, that's got all the facilities, and in fact could do it. And I personally believe that FIFA have blown the idea out every 4 years and even for the future because they're absolutely frightened of the fact that with the sponsorship and with the power that America's got, that they would in fact become a world power in it.
I think
that's the reason they've done it. And the amazing thing is,
but the Cosmos still play and still draw an audience. Now I don't know if the Arrows on Long Island still play, but for the Indoor Soccer League, the Arrows always drew an audience. They had Shep Messing as a goalie.
Indoor soccer is quite big over there. Never took off on that over here. But see, the thing is now, we're having to restructure the whole of the soccer league over here because it's collapsing. It is absolutely falling apart.
Why is that?
Because it's been run wrong, it's been run by the wrong people, it's run by people that live in the past, that don't know what the hell's going on. The fact of life is, because things have become more and more costly, the only way that you can keep sport going properly on a fair basis is to have sponsorship and things coming in. Otherwise, radio stations can't exist. I mean, sport can't exist. I mean, it's come into music now, because there's no other way that some of the, even the classical side, that some of the orchestras can survive unless they've got sponsorship. England's always slow. Soccer's now collapsed in this country, and it'll have to be restructured to a smaller amount of size. But I believe that could all have been saved had America been given the chance to stage a World Cup and to really get involved in world soccer, because then you've got huge companies such as McDonald's, not trying to advertise, but such as McDonald's, who are known worldwide.
Moosehead Beer, who sent us here.
Absolutely, who would have jumped in, because you've suddenly got a world thing that's going, and it would have saved soccer.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact of the fuddy-duddies of FIFA who run it, you know, as soccer is pretty well destroyed.
But I'm saying, could part of it be, now, the World Cup is only held every 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Now, could that, you know, if there was a conclusion to the sport every year, do you think you would get more American support other than it's hard enough to trace a team doing something for an entire year. To trace them doing something for 4 years.
Well, I disagree. You see, I'm a against the 4 years for the Olympics and against the 4 years for soccer. I think 2 years it should be. Because what happens is there are certain players that reach their peak, same as there are certain athletes that reach their peak within that 4 years, and they don't ever get, that should actually be Olympic champions that never get the chance to be. I think both competitions should be, you know, 2 yearly.
I think in America, maybe football overshadows soccer so much that it's hard to give it a chance.
Football overshadows USFL football, for that matter. Yeah. So, it's the Morning Zoo here at 93.3 WMR, talking soccer.
Very serious,
that was, but it was nice, with Rick Wakeman, who's our guest this morning. You have a new album coming out.
Yes, sir, I have a live album that comes out at Christmas.
And what is included on this record?
Well, what it is, I recorded it live at Hammersmith early on this year, and it's the same stuff that basically I played on the American tour that we finished a few months back. Because it suddenly occurred to me that over the years, I'd never, because I sort of rewrote all the Henry stuff and the Journey stuff and the Arthur stuff, you know, for a band, it becomes sort of, for want of a better word, more 80s, as they say, that it was not down on record. And quite a few people, you know, in the English tour, said, why can't we buy this? Because it's so different from the other, but it's still all the old Henry stuff and the Journey stuff and Arthur stuff, but it's so different. Why can't we buy it? So we thought, that's a good idea. Thank you, Mr. Punter, we said. And we recorded, actually with the help of Capital Radio, where we are. At the moment, Capital, we use their mobile and all their people together. And we recorded as a live album. And I'm really pleased with it because no cheating, because normally when people do a live album, you go into the studio and you touch up the vocals, or touch up the vocalist if it's a female. You sort of add, tart up the instruments. You get rid of mistakes and all that.
Right.
What we did with this is exactly as it came out. We just took it into the studio and mixed it. But there's not one overdub. It's as it stands. And I'm chuffed to old boots with it. And it contains bits from King Arthur, most of Journey to the Center of the Earth, if not all of it, and four of the Henry numbers. We've crammed it all onto one album. It's called Live at Hammersmith, and I'm really chuffed with it, I must admit.
Well, what I'm going to do here is we're going to take care of some business, and we're going to get you to play some instruments with us, and then we'll come back, and as we're in break, I'd like you to pick something from the Six Wives record that we could play on the air, and something that corresponds to what it is that you have on the new live album. It's presently 59 degrees on Rittenhouse Square, 23 minutes in front of 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:37 the time.
No, you play.
Well, why don't you do that little solo you were doing?
Yeah, come on. Ladies and gentlemen,
in case everything goes wrong, we can give him a corner somewhere in the city and a number of musical instruments. Okay, here we go.
This is taken from the very, very serious film, the 2001 Space Knobalot, whatever it was called, with the all the monkeys and the things.
Right, and that big black thing.
I'm saying nothing. Oh, it's broken.
No, it can't be broken.
The brown one's broken.
Try it again.
Hold on.
Rick Wakeman, live in concert on the Morning Zoo from London. This is just too much. More!
Hit it, Weezer. And one more for Flipper. The Morning Zoo here at 93.3 WMMR. All of 16 minutes in front of 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:44. Rick Wakeman is our guest. We're having a jolly old time with you.
Super jolly, yes.
Now, what we put together is there's a medley of from Six Wives.
A medley of
Six Wives, actually.
Yes, this was a thing I used to do in the Yes days. In my youth.
In your youth.
Yeah, well, shortly after the war, when we were doing the early tours of America, we all used to have our solo spots, which sort of got bigger, sort of went into boils sort of thing, you know. And Steve used to do the clap, which was his guitar piece, before people sort of start writing in and saying that we're mentioning social diseases. He used to play this guitar piece called the clap. John used to do a thing where he just used to sing solo. And I used to do a medley where it was doing stuff in the Six Wives of Henry VIII. But the problem was, the whole object of having a solo spot was that you did it on your own. Something which I suppose a lot of us do. And So I just plonked together as many things as I could. But it was very difficult in those days because you didn't have all the wonderful sequences and things you could do with instruments. So I used to have blocks of wood with nails in it and weights and things and stick them all over the place. And this was the outcome. And we stuck it on the Yes Songs album. Actually, still to this day, I can't remember playing half of it. but it is genuine, totally untouched by human studios.
At 93.3 WMMR, the Six Wise Medley. The Morning Zoo, live from Capital Radio in London, here at 93.3 WMMR. Wick Wakeman has been our guest.
Oh, thank you.
Every once in a while, I dump into Governor Kane, the governor of New Jersey.
Oh.
And it just happens. There's nothing I could do about it. Rick Wakeman has been our guest over the course of the past hour. And a question just came to us from Chip, our producer, back on stateside. And he wants to know why you wore a Flyers jersey under your cape.
Well, the truth of the matter is, I went to see a Flyers game, before I went to see the Flyers game, I met a guy at the Spectrum who played for Flyers called Mr. Schultz, who was one of the nicest men, he won't remember, he was one of the nicest men I'd met, he's ever so nice, we generally chatted, and he said, look, you should come along and see a game, and I said, yeah, that'd be really nice, what a nice man, and I went along to see a game, and he killed people. and I couldn't believe that this very nice man that I had spoken to, very, very polite, really nice, he went around and sort of physically maimed people. I thought he was absolutely wonderful. So I became a converted fan, and I bought a shirt, you know, a Flyer shirt. And in fact, it wasn't just in Philadelphia. When I used to wear the capes, I used to wear it everywhere, and I've still got it. And I'm very, very proud of my Flyer shirt.
Flyers are doing very well now. They've won 13 straight.
13 yeah. straight. Which breaks an NHL record.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's really funny how, at the time I knew nothing about ice hockey at all, but it's really funny how something like that can, I've become an avid follower, you know.
That's a little something to do with the fights, though.
They're wonderful. I mean, they are tremendous.
Hockey fans will say, no, the fighting's ruining the game.
I mean, I've got into...
Come on!
I've got into Aussie rules football. I mean, you ever see, get the chance, the Aussie rules football. They actually do kill each other. There are no rules. I mean, it's wonderful. I went to the grand final this year, and there was a whole stadium of absolutely paralytic Australians all going, all like cans of beer and everything, all thrown up over each other. It was horrible.
Sounds like a typical Australian event.
I thought it was absolutely disgraceful. I went every day.
Rick Wakeman has been our guest. We want to thank you for stopping by the Morning Zoo.
Thank you kindly.
And next time you're in Philadelphia, please stop by again.
I would be very kind. I'd like to very much.
All right, I got to take care of some business here. Might as well do CFO here. All right, sounds good. MMR. Thank you, Jack. All right, great. Okay. And Steve Howe is our guest now. Good morning.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you all doing out there?
We're doing fine. Philadelphia's doing fine and happy to have you here. I didn't realize you were such a big sports fan.
Wow. Well, Jack's really put me on the spot. He's dynamite, isn't he?
He is. He's nothing like anybody you have here, huh?
No. I can't think of a comparison, you know.
You have formed a new band with Steve Hackett, GTR.
That's right.
And the first question that comes to mind is GTR just short for guitar?
That's right, yeah. I kept writing it down, you know, at home when I'm doing a demo or something, I'll write sort of lead GTR, you know, as an abbreviation. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to make sense. This group's about more about guitars than anything I've done in the past, so it was an opportunity to throw that idea in it. Everybody said, yeah, I like it, you know, I like it.
So how's the new album coming then?
Terrific. We're just over the halfway mark, really. We've got our 12 titles. We're polishing up all the, you know, all the things we want on them. We're just going into lead vocals and lead guitar. In fact, after next week, we get back to work December the 2nd, and we're going to hope to clean it up this year and then mix next year and release it next year.
So we won't see this album in the States for at least an entire year?
Not until early spring, we think. March is our most probable.
March of 86?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was losing track of years.
So was I.
and will a tour follow?
Yes. Yeah, we're going to be out until we know the release date. We obviously want to time the tour so people can, you know, get to grips with the record and come and see us performing live. And hopefully, you know, have a good time.
Who else is in the band?
Well, we've got three other guys besides Steve and myself. The singer's a chap called Max Bacon. He's from Manchester in England. And Phil Spalding is the bass player, and he's done some work with Mike Oldfield and Toya. And then, lo and behold, we've got an American on drums.
Really?
How about that? First time. Jonathan Mover, he's just gone back to Boston, actually, and to see his folks and things. And we just, actually, Steve Hackett met up with him last year. Steve was thinking of doing a solo tour this March back. And lo and behold, Jonathan was recommendable by Steve, and we tried him out, and he just worked out great. The same with all the guys. I mean, we had a few other players, but these guys were real strong, and we liked their sense of enthusiasm and commitment. And certainly their expertise is right up there.
Over the course of the past couple of days, we have asked listeners for questions when guests showed up. And yesterday we made a feeble attempt of getting the phone system to work as well, but that didn't work out. But this morning we didn't have to ask people for questions. The second we announced that you were about to be here, the questions came flying in. Wow. So let me hit you with some of these. Yeah. This is from Dave from the Northeast. It says, how is your book on guitars coming?
Well, that idea I've rechanneled into an idea about making it into a TV series. I'm actually put together a dossier on it with a writer, and what I want to do is really tell the history of the guitar in a 6 or 7 part series. You know, we want something like, you know, the 54 minutes, an hour, you know, shows, and we hope to, well, we're just taking our time moving towards getting the right people interested in it.
Have you done rock class, rock school?
Yeah, here at rock, here at Capitol here, I did the rock master class on the guitar, and that was real good fun.
Because they're beginning to run those in the States on the PBS stations.
Oh, good. I'll be pleased to hear if they do run that.
It's because it was funny, because when I first came into the lobby of Capitol Radio, you see all of these people that, like, you've grown up. It's like, oh, my God, look at this. And, you know, this person, that person. And then you walk in, and here are all of these tapes lined up. And you're like, I'll teach you guitar. I'll teach you keyboards.
Yeah.
This is from Jack from Upper Darby. What is your favorite Yes album, and do you see any of the other members?
I'll take that in reverse. I see Bill Bruford. I see Patrick Mraz. I don't see a lot of the other guys, really. Who have I missed out? I must have missed out somebody. Well, of course, Jeff Downs I'm working with now. He's producing GTR. And in a way, I met Jeff Downs when he joined Yes. So he's officially a Yes member. I still see Trevor, and he's a dear friend. So really, it's Trevor, and it's Bill, and it's Patrick. And I suppose the other guys are really caught up in the new Yes, if you like to call it that, or whatever, the current Yes lineup. And our schedules are really opposed, and I don't see a lot of them. My favorite Yes album, that's pretty tough. I would most probably single out, I think, Close to the Edge. It was the time when we were working easiest together, and certainly the music, I think, showed that. I like all the first three I did, but the Close to the Edge is most probably the one of the high spots.
What do you think about Trevor joining the band and his color that he's added to the group?
Well, when I look back, I think about Machine Messiah as being the epitome of Trevor Horn in the group. He helped, did quite a bit of production on it. He did a lot of the writing, did all the singing. And really, he had a very tough job following John, and, you know, if anybody, we pushed him into it more than, because you must be crazy, I can't do this. We were saying, well, we think you can, you know, try. And I think he did a fantastic job. I think it's just very, very tough following a singer like John Anderson. And certainly, we were uncompromising. We wouldn't change keys and things like this, which help singers, you know, too. We actually made it real tough for him. And I think under the circumstances, I think he should get 10 out of 10.
All right, from Donald, who's from Philadelphia, is the only particular place. Will you have another solo album? And if so, what musicians will you use? Which is really...
Yeah. Well, I mean, GTR is obviously going to use up a lot of my material, but I got a feeling that maybe sometime next year I might get the chance to do... I've always wanted to do something with... like the solo guitar. I mean, I'm quite into the non-supportive role in the guitar. But put me in there, and I'll find if I can make it work on my own. Because doing GTR, you know, I'm getting a lot of help, and I'm throwing out a lot of ideas, and it's a mammoth project. I think for a change, I'd quite like to do something a bit more low profile. I'd still like to record in digital. I'd still like to do a fantastic record. But I'd like to sort of just have no support. It's kind of interesting to work in that area and just to be a solo guitarist. But that doesn't mean it's going to be like 40 minutes of Spanish guitar. I think that would be right not up my street. I would try and colour it with like what Chet Atkins was doing and what Steve Morse does when he gets the chance to play on his own. Try and be really colourful, but not have 3 million people supporting me or the Phil Spector echo drum sound. You know, I just think that's great in the right context, but I think a guitarist like Leo Cocchi or somebody like that comes into their own when you take away all the supportive roles, all the crutches, all the devices, and say, play, man, play.
Speaking of Steve Morse, someone, Tim, has called in. Tim, the man they call Tim. who are some of your top new guitar players, and are you doing a project with Steve Morse?
No, unfortunately, I'm not doing this project with Steve Morse. I believe he's got a new album coming out. He did Introductions, I think, was the one that's been out last. I believe he's now got another one out, which has got, I believe, singers, guests, a bit like Industrial Standards with Dixie Dregs, where he had a whole lot of people coming in to help. I can't think of many other players in Steve Morse's standard. I mean, he's really, really up there with me, and I love him like a brother. You know, he's really, really gets me hot. I mean, I have to, like, my brain goes, you know, he excites me a lot.
We're talking with Steve Howe, and one of the things that we've asked a number of people here is, what is it like? Of course, everyone we're talking to now knows of your fame, your notoriety in the States. How is it for you in this country? And can the two compare, or, you know, are you just another guy on the street here?
Well, yeah, well, I quite like the element that I am just another guy on the street here. No, but I do have quite a considerable amount of, I have had a lot of success here, and I've enjoyed it. It's a lower profile kind of success. And back in the days when I was in Yes, we always used to say that nobody really knew what we looked like because our photos were always sort of dark, you know, all our hair was in our face, and you couldn't really see. And at that time, we could stroll about and nobody would know. But I think, you know, there are hard, you know, there are a bank of fans here who know us and have followed our careers through various, you know, the different groups and different setups. So the kind of success I've enjoyed here has been at the right level for me, because it hasn't, you know, taken the carpet away from my personal life or anything like that. So I'm real down to earth. You know, my Jeep's outside. I just sort of get in it and drive home. nobody really, you know, blinks an eyelid. But there are other times, other areas. Obviously, if there's a concert going on, and if I go to see somebody's concert, like I might go to see Midge tomorrow, and like there's the time when, you know, people who are into music like will go, hey, isn't that guitarist, you know, used to play? Isn't that Steve Howe? You know, Steve Hackett Howe? You know, it's like, you know, there is a level where I do have to just watch it a little bit, but it's not as intense. I mean, the States is pretty intense, and I have to be quite on my toes.
One of the surprising things about listening to Capital Radio is you don't hear, you know, you don't turn on the radio and hear Roundabout come up. You don't hear any old Led Zeppelin track. You know, none of that. It's
the English musicians, really, without trying to blow a 500-year-old argument or carry on an old argument. One of the first songwriters that ever wrote songs here 500 years ago, a guy called John Dowland, right? You guys probably never heard of him. He wrote hundreds of brilliant songs that really make your heart makes you want to cry, this guy. And people like Peter Pears and Julian Bream, they play this kind of stuff. And he had to leave England to make it. He went and played for the King of France, and he went over to Belgium, and he was mega. But in England, it was like, John who? You know, it's a little bit like that here. To be famous here is almost, you're almost on the wrong side of the law, because, you know, you're doing well. There's something really strange about this country, and it does take a while for them to really get behind you. And I think there's a lot of artists like Sting, Phil Collins, you know, they've really got behind, and they have incredible talent. But I think if you're part of a band, then it's sort of like a bit passé, you know. Oh, success. Oh, yeah, he was successful a few years back. It's very casual here, and they certainly don't put statues up for any great musicians anymore around here.
You know? When you were with Yes, how many guitars did you travel with?
Well, the average was about 10, which isn't really a lot, but it was considered quite extravagant. But I kind of found that a lot of the time each tune I would play on an album, I'd like to choose a different guitar because of the things it would do to me, to help me to think differently, so I didn't keep playing the same old licks, you know, down, 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 down. Yeah, I didn't want to keep playing that way. So I picked up another guitar and sort of found something, and I'm doing that now. I didn't do that in Asia. I kept playing the same guitar in Asia because in a way I had, I was bored with changing guitars all the time, and I tried to pin it down with one really good guitar called an ES artist, but now I'm back to the let's get a Tele out and let's get the Strats and let's get all these things out, and it's helping me to be colourful.
And you never smashed your guitars like Pete Townsend?
No, I cry. You know. I tell you a very short story. I'll make it real short, and that is that Antonioni once made a film called Blow Up, right? Well, I was in that film at one time. In a group called, I think we were called The In Crowd, and we wrote a song called Blow Up, and Antonio thought we were great, you know, Antonioni, I think his name is, and all of a sudden they said, well, like, this group, The In Crowd, who are they? They're a bit small, let's get Jeff Beck's band in. Well, when Jeff Beck's in this film breaking, they asked me to break a guitar in this film, and I said, no way, you know. They said, well, we'll get a replica. They made a few replicas of my 175, the guitar I used to play in the Yes days. Well, Jeff Beck is playing like his Telecaster, and then it cuts to a scene where he decides to destruct his guitar. It's 175. So if you really look closely, my appearance, my only near miss, I actually never got to break it. And I'm quite glad. Quite glad. I don't break guitars. I renovate them.
Steve Howe is our guest. We got to take care of some business here and then come back and talk about some Yes things and more about GTR. But it's presently 50. Steve Howe is our guest. You've taken to the xylophone?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Okay, so.
This is the first time I haven't played this thing.
Yeah,
in
I know.
A
what,
year.
What do you want? If you want, do you want the slide whistle?
Can I try that?
You can
Ooh,
try the slide whistle.
Okay.
All right. This is fun. All right. And I got these guys. I'm still the one with the most instruments I have to deal with. Here we go. 93.3 WMR. Hit it, Weezer.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
And this is a shark solo. That's close.
That is deep and heavy.
Shattered.
Steve Howe playing with the Morning Zoo.
So damn busy playing with the instruments, I forgot to yank the letter. All right, this comes from, we have Roundabout queued up back in the studio. Steve Hackett is on deck. Steve Howe is here now. And, hello! And we have Roundabout queued up in the studio. And, you know, it's one of those things that, and this happens to everybody, where there's something that you come across in your life, maybe, you know, like every day, and you might have come across it every day for like 15 years, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, is that what they're talking about? And we're driving around the city, and the driver's saying, well, we just have to go through this roundabout here. We just have to go through this roundabout over here. And I'm going, wait a second. Is this, and the song, and the thing, and the, is this all together, this one thing? So let's talk about Roundabout and how it came about.
Well, it was a long time ago. I got clocked back in my internal computer, internal.
Hit the gliss noise, Skipper.
John and I wrote that in Scotland, I think, and he was saying to me, you know, Roundabout, you know, we sort of talked about what it was, going around this thing, turning off at different places, and I think that, you know, vaguely was some of the thinking in it, was that you get on a road, you got to get off somewhere, and life's a bit like that too. There's lots of diversions you can take, and a roundabout sort of symbolised those sort of choices, really, that we had, you know, that you can get off at lots of different exits, you would call them, right? And here's the beginning of it. It's very dramatic. It goes, roundabout.
93.3 WMMR. Steve Howe is our guest, and Steve Hackett is going to join us momentarily. The Morning Zoo, live from Capital Radio in London on 93.3 WMMR. We've been talking with Steve Howe. He's just been joined by... Guy, I bet you it's been ages since you've seen each other. Steve Hackett's here now.
Hi, guys.
Good morning, Steves.
Good morning. Wake up, America.
This is going to be rough. While the two of you are in the studio together, it is going to be rough going, Steve.
You should put, you know, me on the left and Steve Hackett on the right, and then you'd be able to sort of pan
us. They call us Jose and Ricardo, you know, just to...
Who's Jose?
He's Jose.
I'm Jose. He's
him.
How'd you come about with this little Spanish bit here? Jose.
Something to do with our middle names. You have to look at that. We're not telling you anymore, so you got to work it out.
I don't know what secrets you can tell us now, at least in front of Jose.
What secrets?
But what is it like, you know... The two of you.
I'm not a communist.
I'm saying the two of you joining forces is an intense undertaking.
Yes, it is. It's the kind of thing that shouldn't really work, but there we are. You know, we're 4 months down the line, and we were just about talking the other day, I think. So you know,
4 months in the studio. I mean, we've been working on this project nearly a year now. So it's
now. How much writing do you actually do together?
Most of it.
Yeah. I'd say about 90%. You know, we spent a long time actually doing all that kind of stuff. You know, writing and rewriting, and we just wanted to make sure that, you know, just like you can put together a band like this, and people expect guitar playing, but they think, oh well, the songs aren't going to be very good. You know, these guys are going to go in with a couple of axes and like, you know, zip it off in a couple of minutes. And we decided, no, wouldn't it be good if the songs were good as well? So that's what took the time.
Now, just out of curiosity's sake, how many guitars do you, Steve Hackett, travel with when you go on the road? You put up on stage?
Well, the last tour I did was acoustic, so I just had one. But I think I probably about 6 or 7 guitars.
So basically, you guys are going to be a guitar roadie's nightmare.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Roadies love tours, because all they can do is like get total brain damage all the time. Work. You know, and they haven't got time to complain. You know, it's good.
Home of rock and roll, the Zoo is in London at Capital Radio, and we want to thank Steve Howe for stopping by this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we're going to deal with your sidekick in crime now, right, Steve Hackett, to make life all the easier on us and on the audience. Get out of here, you!
No. Right. You just wait until we get down to Philly, you guys. We're going to be picking. We're doing some hot picking.
You know, something I forgot to mention while you were here is you guys, during the bicentennial, this is Steve Howe, ladies and gentlemen, played to probably the largest concert audience in the history of the States.
I think it was one of the first concerts, or it was either the first or the second concert of the JFK Stadium. It was just mega, mega, mega.
Some 120,000 people.
All of our minds, we couldn't seem to close our mouths. It was like gasping. And the people got a bit cold up the back, so they started burning up chairs and things, which wasn't good for the corporation vibe, you know. But it was a great show, and it certainly sticks in my mind, and we've got a bit of footage of it floating about somewhere.
Right. With a guy all the way in the back going, "Time and a word!"
Somebody was shouting that. Well, I do look forward, though, to get back to Philly, because it's a real warm crowd there, and we're really going to give them some burning up.
Well, if Philadelphia is a market for anybody, it is definitely a market for the two of you, because your backgrounds and Philadelphia's love for the music the two of you have produced over the years is just incredible. So I could tell you, as the voice of Philadelphia right now, everybody's anxious to see you there.
Great.
Thank you for stopping by, and hello, Steve Hackett.
Hi there. How you doing?
All right. I want to ask you about some things that we did ask Steve Howe, but get your opinions on it and your views.
Not guilty.
How did the two of you actually team up, or did you decide to do this?
Well, we basically met over lunch, and this is my version. The gospel according to me is that, you know, we'd spoken a couple of times on the phone, and I'd seen Steve's gigs and things, and I'd always kept up an interest because I'm pretty close pals with John Wetton and some of the guys from Asia. So, you know, it was just, I was talking to Brian Lane one day, who's Asia's manager and also used to manage Yes, give Brian a plug here. And we were saying, you know, wouldn't it be interesting? I was talking about, you know, forming a band, and he said, you know, I've got Steve Howe, and he's no longer with Asia, so, and my wife was there at the time. We were having lunch, and she said, you know, what if two guitarists formed a band together? So actually, you know, he said, well, yeah, it'd be great. It'd be like Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck getting together, wouldn't it? You know, if it would work. And he said, you wouldn't really be interested in that, Steve, would you? I said, well, you know, maybe we should talk about it a bit. So Steve and I got together, had lunch, and we decided, well, you know, we got two choices. We could do a 5-minute project album, and then, you know, people will say, you know, file under folk, or we could actually go, you know, the whole hog, and we put this band together, and here we are.
Now, when you write, are there songs that are, you know, yours, songs that are his, or are all of the songs both of yours?
You can never say all of the songs are both of us. On a large percentage of the songs, it'll be, yeah, you know, it'll be like half and half. But other times, you know, you'll find a situation whereby it's maybe more my idea or more Steve's idea. So you can't really say.
Okay.
Right.
I want to go
over to you.
I want to go back to an album that that you put out a while back, Please Don't Touch.
Right.
And the song Narnia, which is just such a beautiful piece of music.
That's right.
At that time, was that your first solo project outside of Genesis?
Outside of Genesis, that was the first thing. And you're so right. There was the guy, Steve Walsh was on vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Walsh from Kansas. And that was great, you know. It was funny, you know. That one was going to be released as a single, but we ran into all sorts of contractual problems, and you know, that's what tends to happen.
One of the most popular T-shirts ever handed out, also to this day, since that album has been came out, they hand out promotional T-shirts to disc jockeys, and I have bumped into more disc jockeys who own that T-shirt than any other one.
I'm still wearing mine.
I still have mine. So does the shark. I see the shark in it all the time. But
I washed mine. I'm sorry.
We have Narnia queued right now. Can you set this song up for us? And
Any of you that read out there, there's a guy called C.S. Lewis who's not as famous as Lewis Carroll, but everyone gets him mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy writes great children's books. He did a whole bunch called The Chronicles of Narnia. And the first one was called The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And so I based this song on this sort of magical land that goes throughout all of this thing, and it's called Narnia.
At 93.3 WMMR, this is Steve Hackett and Narnia. You're laughing at your own work, son. The Morning Zoo, live from London on 93.3 WMMR. Steve Hackett has joined us now. For those of you who are just joining us, Steve has formed a new band with Steve Howe called GTR, which we found out earlier this morning is the abbreviation for guitar. You know, it was funny because I had been saying this and looking at it for about 2 weeks now. And this morning when I put it down in front of me, all of a sudden I realized, this is short for guitar.
You're the first person to actually understand that. It's funny, we had to explain that to everybody. Everyone says, what does GTR stand for?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly.
In radio, we use lots of silly abbreviations, and with some that have nothing to do with how the words are spelled either. So, let me ask you one quick question, because there are a number of questions coming in from Philadelphia. If you have any questions, please call the studio, and they'll transfer them over to us. 263-8933 for Pennsylvania, 590-8933 for Jersey, 762-8933 for Delaware. But, Let me find it here. Wait a second, where did it go?
Pretty good for a guy in London.
No, that's all right. No, I'll get to it. Will you do another solo album, and will you work with Steve Walsh? Is what Joe wants to know.
Can I answer the second question first? I'd love to work with Steve again sometime. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I was in contact with Kansas recently, but As regards solo albums, yeah, sure there will be, but right at this moment, this is the thing that's, you know, taking all my attention.
Mm.
So, you know, you can't really do this to the kind of standard that we both want it to be and really be doing too many things on the side, you know. It's kind of, it's like head down and let's really burn, you know.
Steve Hackett is our guest. We're going
to
take it.
I went down to Bath, which is where he operates out of. He's got a farm down there and he's got his own studio. And I was fascinated to hear his stuff. In fact, he'd just been to Brazil because I recorded my last album in Brazil. The album called Till We Have Faces that had a million different Brazilian percussionists on.
Mm.
And he was interested in all this ethnic stuff. I love Pete's work. I think Pete's work is fantastic. And I, in fact, said to Pete, listen, I mean, if you want me to play anything for you, including harmonica that no one knows, because he said, I want harmonica on this track. I said, yeah, but I play harmonica, you know, let me do it. I really want to do it. So, but the thing is that didn't work out at that point. But the harmonica track, I'm auditioning it with GTR at the moment. So if GTR like it, you know, there might be another band called H-A-R-P, you know.
I know Gabriel is in one of the things. We were hoping on getting a hold of him while we were over here, and just our luck, we came to London. He went to New York. He's working. He's scoring a film right now.
Oh, yeah.
And as the only information that we've gotten on Peter and his new album from Geffen is to be announced. it was supposed to be announced in September, then it was supposed to be announced in November, and now it's supposed to be announced in the new year.
If so. I may say so, I always think that a Peter Gabriel album is worth waiting for.
Yeah, it is.
I love Pete's stuff. I think it's wonderful.
Which brings me to part two of this question, which comes from Karen. Will the movie based on The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway ever come out?
Well, I was asked about that ages and ages ago. I mean, you've got to remember this is like 10 years down the line, if not 11 years. At some point, if someone wants to make the movie, I'm up for it, certainly. Yeah, sure. In fact, I was playing The Lamb the other day and I thought, it's really weird because, you know, when you do an album, you remember all the things that were going on at the time. Like I remember getting divorced, you know, and so and living in this crumbling house, which was where we were trying to record the thing, and then having to abort that, and then move to Wales and doing it in mobiles. So the whole thing was kind of fraught on the kind of social scene. It wasn't the easiest circumstances for conceiving an album, but now I can listen to it and not get traumatized, and I love the album.
So when you look back at working with Genesis and what you're doing nowadays, that must have been was it a rough decision for you to pick up and leave the band?
Well, it was something that I felt that it had to be done at some point. I really felt that I'd come to the end of that particular road. I felt I wasn't going to learn any more from it.
Mm-hmm. So here it is, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Anything you want to say about this as it starts coming up underneath us?
Well, I just, you know, it's weird because, like, when I mean, I said that this fits my divorce, but it was also when I met my wife, my present wife. We've been happily married for years now, and so it's also, you know, it was on the cusp of like, you know, the sort of the down and then right on the up again, you know, this kind of my own personal revelation.
93.3 WMMR. Steve Hackett is our guest, and this is
presumably to keep everyone.
The Morning Zoo, live from Capital Radio in London. I have a question that came in from Dennis in King of Prussia. What guitar are you playing these days?
I'm playing a Les Paul. It's the only guitar to get. You can go anywhere with a Les Paul. Just get yourself a Les Paul and a Marshall stack and turn up loud, and you can go anywhere. I'm still playing the Les Paul. That's all you have to know. The rest are all toys. The Les Paul is still the boy.
Which year Les Paul do you have?
Mine's 1957.
Is that the one that weighs about 2,000 pounds?
Oh, good. I mean, they're the tiny guitars that weigh a ton, and if you hit someone over the head, they won't get up.
Right. The first time someone handed one of those to me, they said, here, why don't you put this on, right?
That's right.
And I'm like, oh, my God.